And we typically frown on externalizing those costs on unsuspecting people.
And colleagues, if we are going to do this, then the whole part of what we've been talking about for the last several months is a level playing field. So the taxi companies currently have to have more insurance than the TNCs. I know, Commissioner Salzman, you said that you weren't ready to make a decision on this today. However, if it's going to take the companies a while to gear up, it might be wise to give some direction if three or more of us are looking at having the same rules across the board for insurance, that indeed they will need to provide insurance at $1 million, with the primary being the TNC, starting when the app is switched on. And you mentioned earlier about a bright line. That's a very bright line. You've got the app switched on. If you get into a crash when you're going to hit the screen because you're about to accept a ride, that's a clear cause and an effect, and yet it wouldn't be covered at this point.
Well, it would be covered. It wouldn't have a minimum of $1 million coverage, but under the what's in place currently and what we have supported around the country, including it in Oregon, there is coverage. It's the 25, 50, 100 minimum limit coverage.
Yeah, that doesn't cover even 10 days in ICU.
But it's not just that coverage. I mean, other coverages apply. Any coverage that's required by the state, and in Oregon, personal injury protection insurance is required for all drivers, and
pathetic.
Underinsured and uninsured motorist coverage are required by the state.
But sir, don't we run, isn't there a catch-22 here? I mean, aren't most insurance companies going to disclaim on the basis that they're going to say that the person was operating in a commercial context and their own insurance doesn't apply? My insurance on my car does not allow me to run a commercial.
Well, that's why we're talking about a separate product, TNC coverage that is required from the time the app goes on all the way through the ride.
Right, but it's with limits of 25, 50, 100. What's
until
the
period two?
What's
yes.
the additional coverage that you're referring to above and beyond that?
This national agreement language that we have pursued in Oregon and passed in 20 states so far says, if your state requires you as a private passenger auto driver to carry UM, UIM, and PIP coverage, it is required coverage in period one and period two under the TNC insurance policy. There is no gap. That's the whole purpose of the seeking the legislation in every state, is to have no gap.
And that's the current law in Oregon?
No, we have not enacted that law in Oregon. We were not able to get that bill passed last session, but that is the language that's in place, as I understand it, in the existing pilot project in Portland.
That's right. But Commissioner Fish, you reminded me of another question that I wanted to ask Mr. Bryan, which is that we've heard some concerns over the last several months that that drivers might have their insurance canceled if they haven't told their insurers that they are going to be driving for a TNC. And that there might be a massive cancellations, and suddenly the insurance companies hear that you're driving for a TNC and they cancel your policy. There's also a concern expressed for passengers and also people who a driver might hit, that it might in effect wind up being a retroactive cancellation, that a driver who's driving for a TNC might hit somebody and a claim is submitted to when they're driving for themselves, not with the national agreement coverage in period one, two, three, that a driver might hit somebody and then a claim would be submitted against their personal insurance, and the insurance company will say, no, I'm not going to pay that claim because I didn't know that this driver was driving for Uber or Lyft, and if I had, I would have canceled the policy, so the policy is retroactively canceled. So I just wanted you to address those concerns and see how valid you think they might be.
Well, I have heard that concern raised, but I have never, ever actually seen evidence of it having occurred. I personally have no knowledge of that ever occurring anywhere in the country, and that's as far as I can respond to that specifically. But I have heard that concern, and I've heard legislatures express those concerns as we've talked about this bill. I have a six-state region. I pursued this legislation in five of those six states, and it's been approved in four of those six states. Across the country, 20 states have enacted the very language that's in place in Portland today. 27 states overall have enacted some kind of regulations establishing insurance requirements for TNCs. Most of them, all except one, follow generally the same principles that are in place in Portland today. And what I think I need to state, if you were to go forward with something that had the different limits, the higher limits, you'd be the only place in the country that requires that. Now, if I may, go back to your question, Commissioner. The insurers have had a lot of concerns about TNC drivers, and that's why we have been interested in this kind of legislation. What happens when you enact the kind of rules that are already in place in Portland currently, or might consider on a statewide basis, is that you're reducing the exposure that an insurer has to being charged for an accident when someone was driving their vehicle for commercial purposes. And talk about that bright line that I mentioned before. So there's not much incentive for an insurance company to cancel someone whose accident is covered by their activity, you know, by a TNC insurance policy when they get into an accident on their private passenger auto policy. I can see them getting canceled if they have an accident on their private passenger auto policy. That does happen sometimes if they've had multiple accidents especially. But tickets, accidents, those things that occur on one side of the line are the things that the insurers have exposure for. So there's not much incentive to say, now, we had a conversation once before, and I want to add the addendum that if insurers start asking you if you drive for Uber when you're not driving your car for personal purposes, and you lie about it on the application form, then they probably would have a reason to consider canceling you. But if they did how you phrased the question, I suspect there would be lawsuits and action by the insurance department against a company that did that kind of cancellation.
Okay, other questions for Mr. Bryan? It's been very helpful having you here, so thank you.
My pleasure. Anytime I can help.
Anything else for him? So thank you very much.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thanks a lot. So I think I want to suggest that Director Treat and Mr. Owens come up and join your colleagues here, because I just want to make sure we understand, along with Commissioner Novick's direction, where we're going. So what we have in front of us this afternoon is a report from the task force. The only action that we can take with respect to that report is either accept it or not accept it, because it's a report. But there are other steps ahead which all the testimony that we've heard in this hearing can help inform. One is council members need to articulate the issues or questions that we think need further work. And I want to put an asterisk on that and place that question to you, Commissioner Novick, and also to the team here, and that is, to what extent are we going to ask the task force to soldier on a little more and do some of that work, or is all that work going to fall on Ms. Treat and her staff and city attorney? You don't get to answer that question. He does. But or the task force does, actually, because they're volunteers. So
can I give a preview?
Yeah.
Can I throw in a contender?
Sure.
I personally feel that we are at the point that we get to on planning issues where the next step is Planning and Sustainability Commission staff comes before us with a menu of options.
Right.
And we identify the areas where we want regulation, and staff comes forward with option A, B, C. They pitch an option, we debate it, but we decide.
Correct. And I guess I want to get to the how that happens. So again, today we got a report in front of us. We need to dispose of, and I don't mean that in a pejorative way, that report. Decide it, say thank you, or say never mind. And then the question is, again, there are issues that we want addressed. We can ask staff to bring recommendations. Is there a reason, Commissioner Novick, in your opinion, that to ask the task force to do some of that work versus your bureau?
I think it's an issue-by-issue question. Okay. And I think what I'd like to do is get people the questions on the table, and then we can sort through, to some extent, right here and now, and then maybe we'll take some thought as to whether we'd want to ask the task force to do further review or whether we should just have staff do the review.
Okay. So here's what I would suggest. I have, and I bet others here on the council have, questions and issues based on what I've heard in this hearing, things like the renewal fee and obviously insurance, and even smaller issues like more cab stands, that I have an interest in having those issues considered and brought back for decision making. So I want to suggest that, one, today we take a vote and accept or not accept the report. Two, very swiftly, I would say by tomorrow, each of us ought to make sure we get all of our questions to your office and to PBOT to say, I need more about this, I need more about that, I need more about, I want to see options on this, right? All of us have got some of that, I bet all of us have some of that in mind. And then third, there's a schedule for what's going to happen next, which is, I understand it, on October 7th, right? That's when we're going to get the status report on the 120-day pilot, right? Correct?
That's
and
correct.
And then sometime after that is when we act on the final version of the regulations, correct?
Correct.
So it seems to me that by the end of September, we ought to have all that work done of vetting council's questions and options that we consider when we adopt those regulations. Am I making sense here in terms of a critical path?
You've won me over, but the one thing I would ask, because I think we all benefit from this, is I would ask that you give everybody on council an opportunity today.
Sure.
To put their issues on the record.
Sure. Wouldn't hurt
and
to get
supplement
them
if necessary.
Yeah.
But I think we benefit from hearing each other and then making sure we have a comprehensive list, and then a sense from Commissioner Novick as to whether their questions are going to be answered or perhaps addressed by staff or are going to require the task force to review them.
All right. Jim, I understand that there are members of the task force, maybe all of them, that are willing to do more work if they're asked to by the commissioner.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, council members. The task force is willing to further delve in issues that
right.
you ask them to do so. I think we're balancing here report ownership
yeah.
factor with process fatigue.
Okay. Well,
so we're willing. What the task force members have indicated is we have two meetings set up in September. We're hoping that the set of issues you forward to us for further reconsideration, we could deal with in no more than two meetings.
Okay.
And I would offer this about the action on the report. This is a report on the taxis and TNC elements of the private for hire transportation program. In September, we were going to further work on the limited passenger transportation element. We have not finished the recommendations on that piece. So,
what is that? What is it that you're doing?
The limousines and town cars
limousines.
And shuttles.
Okay.
So we intentionally held that element off, and so that we could devote adequate attention to taxis and TNCs.
I would suggest that we haven't actually finished the first task. So to start another one before we finish the first would not be advisable.
Well, we have started that one, so. It,
but I mean, we here.
Okay, yes. I know. But the point is, we were intending to come back to you with that element of the private for hire transportation program.
The
task force was going to hold recommendations on that element. So, in essence, our report is not complete anyway.
But, Jim, most of my questions, just for example, they don't need to go to the task force. I'm ready to have staff
yeah.
Come forth with language and commentary that we can then debate. I don't need to have it reviewed by another set of eyes. I think you've done a great job.
Yeah, I'm kind of there, too.
Getting us to this point.
And I would not like to move forward on the limousines just yet. In fact, I think there's something to be said for bringing in the private for hire board of review to come and look at what if we've designed this system to allow the TNCs, what then is the impact on the taxi companies and what do they want to do? Because several of my questions and concerns relate to keeping the taxi companies as viable businesses. And that cannot be done by the task force. I would think it has to be done by the private for hire board.
I would point out one of the task force's recommendations is to do away with the private for hire board, and I'm inclined to support that.
I think the private for hire board should have some comments, or should be asked to give comments on that. Further, when we started this whole process, it was how do we allow this alternative transportation mechanism to operate in our city? I expressed my concern that I want there to be taxis who are viable for people like me who will never, ever get into a stranger's car and will never, ever get into a car that has not been properly vetted with government-sponsored background checks. Where we seem to be headed with the task force report is that there will be no company for people like me. There will be no vehicle that I can call with my phone, my landline, and pay with cash necessarily that has had the necessary background checks done by government staff. And that's a big problem. It's not just allowing this other system to work. It's taking away the system that works for me and probably the many of the other folks who are doing those 3 a.m. calls and who are preferentially calling taxis because they prefer the taxis and they trust the taxis. And at 3 a.m. when there's nobody around, you don't want to be screaming with nobody listening. You want to be in a cab with a camera and with every annual background checks, with daily supervisors looking to make sure that the windshield isn't broken. You don't want to be putting yourself in harm's way. And so we need to figure out a system. It seems obvious that there's a lot of support for allowing this alternative mechanism. That's fine. I just visited England. My 85-year-old mother is really good with texting on her phone, but she does not have a smartphone. She will never have a smartphone. She pays for her cabs with cash, and there has to be a service that's available as a public service, as a utility, as part of something that's part of the government structure. That still needs to be available. So doing away with everything and just going the route of complete deregulation doesn't work for me or for a lot of other people in Portland. And it's all well and good to design a system that works for the two-thirds of Uber driver passengers who are visitors. I'm concerned about the people of Portland and how people in Lentz get to their 3 a.m. pharmacy and how I get to the places that I need to go to and how I feel safe. Because I trust our government workers to do the background checks correctly. I trust our government workers to provide the services that government's supposed to.
Commissioner, the issue of whether the background checks are all done by the government or done by the companies with private contractors that we audit is an issue that the task force has looked at that and made a recommendation. The recommendation, of course, is not binding on us. So I think that is an example of an issue that's for us to resolve, not to kick back the task force.
Yeah, and it's, you know, if some folks, which they obviously are comfortable having third-party background checks done and driving an Uber, well and good. There are a lot of us who are not. And so I think that there's some places within this report where actually we do want to have different standards for the different kinds of transportation. And I would like the Private for Hire Board to weigh in. How can we maintain a viable taxi system in this new reality? Well, are we going to continue? Are we going to allow these three new companies to come in? Are we going to further flood the taxi market?
Commissioner, actually, I would have to say that if there's a lot of people like you, then there will be a market for taxi companies. And they will continue to exist because companies exist when there's a lot of people who they need to serve.
Not if they're not regulated. I'm not going out at 3 a.m. I mean, I'm going very often at 3 a.m. anyway.
I haven't heard anybody today say they don't want to develop a playing field that accommodates the TNCs and the taxi companies. Right. Now, and that may have
a few people
been a tune change from a few months ago, but that's what the line is. That's the party line we're hearing today. Everybody deserves to be in this market. And you're talking about the Private for Hire Taxi Board, which kept the moratorium on any new permits for I don't know how many years, but the Private for Hire Taxi Board is part and parcel of the taxi cab industry. And let's face it, if we want a true, unbiased board making policy decisions as it affects TNCs and taxi cabs, it's got to look different than the private.
Well, that's why I think the primary conversation
here. Not to digress here, but
the primary conversation here needs to be between the City Council and our staff.
And then I would like to have some.
I mean, appreciate the task force. They've done their work. I'm prepared to vote to say thank you for your report. But everybody needs to understand, and your points, Commissioner Fritz, are a great illustration of this. We are not adopting the recommendation. We are not implementing any recommendations as a result of thanking this committee and accepting their report.
Correct. Right?
Everybody understands that.
But we do
that
need
we're
to
not,
make.
This is not sleepwalking into legislation here. We are saying, we got your report. We appreciate your recommendations. Thank you. That's what we do by adopting or accepting this report. But it's very important, and you just started to do that we articulate the issues that we want addressed before we adopt new final regulations, and you've just done a great job of that. I know you have more, and so do the rest of us. So again, I hear the request. What we ought to do is make sure each of us puts those issues out there today to the extent that we're ready, and understand that we might wake up tomorrow morning or walk out of here tonight and say, I got three more that I got to make sure that Leah and her team know about. So my suggestion, again, is that we start now and finish tomorrow, or at least by the end of the week, getting our requests for options for the council to consider back to us in a timely way. Does that work? So there's a couple ways we can do that. We can do that right now in turn, or we can do that as we vote to adopt the report.
Let's do it now, Mayor.
Okay, that's fine with me. So let's just start at one end and work our way along, and you get another shot in a minute. But let's start with Commissioner Fish.
Okay. First of all, thanks to everybody for the testimony and for this discussion. And I have a number of issues. They are not exclusive, because I think the report and the recommendations address a number of issues that I'm interested in. But I want to just drill down on a handful that have been highlighted through the testimony and I still have concerns about. Primarily, for me, it's the insurance question. And my own preference at this point is for parity, consistency across TNCs and cab companies. If there is any ambiguity at this point, I don't think there is, that the commercial policy has to be primary. Make that as clear as possible. And then I think there needs to be a consistent minimum of a minimum of $1 million in all three periods. And given what the gentleman told us about how the insurance industry works, I think that's an issue that the sooner the council reaches some consensus on that point, the fairer to all concerned, because it sounds like there's some work to be done with the insurance industry. The second thing for me is a more technical issue, and it's understanding what minimum standards of service means under 16.40.270. And frankly, this flows from an extraordinary meeting I had with some law students who've been looking at access and the code, and they persuaded me that under sub C, service citywide 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, does not actually set forth the service standard. It's too generic. What does service citywide mean? And I'll give you an example. Someone took out an app and showed me that the further you get from the downtown area, the more likely for Uber, it's going to say no car available. Now, I understand that the rides in the inner city, that there are more customers in the inner city, and I understand, I guess, the argument that they're more lucrative, but this council will not tolerate redlining of service delivery. And if service citywide means what I think it means, then you do not frustrate the will of having citywide service by declaring to a potential customer that no cars are available simply because of your zip code. And I want to make sure that nothing we are adopting permits redlining, effectively redlining communities, and it appears to be communities of where it's most likely that people are lower income, more people of color, and also people with disabilities. So that has to be addressed. I continue to believe that it is unacceptable to allow for service agreements that are inconsistent with Oregon law or city law, and say that, well, but there's a catch-all clause that says local laws apply if they are different. Most people I know don't have lawyers on retainer to sort of figure those issues out. I think it's a disservice. I think it's bad for the consumer to put out information that may be erroneous and say, yeah, but we notified them that if it's inconsistent with local law, you get the benefit of local law. Who has the time to figure that out? I don't think it's asking a lot from a consumer point of view to say that the service agreements need to be tailored to the states in which these companies operate. And it seems to me a $50 billion company can figure that out. I'm going to defer to my colleagues on background checks because I'm not sure where I'm going to fall on that, although I think it's an issue about who does them and what's the standard. And I also will defer to my colleagues on the question of permit fees, but I'm now just, I don't really understand what we're doing. If you're a taxi company, you have to pay one permit fee and there's a renewal fee. If you're a TNC, you don't. If we're going to get to level playing field, I'd like to know what a level playing field looks like in terms of permit fees. And I'd like to understand what the cost to the city is of deferring on that question, because if we're just renewing permits during this experimental period and we're losing revenue, who's supposed to make up that revenue to then fund the enforcement of the system? So on both sides, I need more information. I'll join with the mayor in saying I'd like to know about the and Mayor, you had mentioned you were going to raise this, and I just mm-hmm. want to encourage us to put it on the record. In the testimony from Mr. Waco, he says add cab stands at various locations. Seems to me to be a thoughtful recommendation, and I'd like to know if that's possible. And I would like to have that included. And frankly, for the next phase, when staff comes back with recommendations, again, I hope it's in consistent with what we get, like on our land use proceedings, where they're complicated issues. The issue is framed. We have options, more than one option in certain instances. And then we have a debate with staff commentary. But I think there's enough complexity here that if you break it out the same way Planning and Sustainability Commission does on complex land use and zoning issues, it'll be easier for us to follow. And frankly, even more important, I think it'll be easier for the public to follow our decision making. Thank you for your good work.
Okay, thank you. Helpful. Commissioner Saltzman, have you got some things to put on the
table?
Well,
I think, you know, most of my policy requests are going to come after we actually have some real data. And that is the conclusion of the trial period. Because the data, you know, really sort of defies some of the myths, I guess, we're being asked to rely on in a lot of the testimony. And, you know, for instance, last week we heard that, you know, wheelchair access was not available through Uber or Lyft. And then we heard the data, and they're actually responding in less than half the time of taxi cabs. So I really want to see the data at the end of this 120-day trial period to help form some of the policy questions I'm going to have about whether we really have a level playing field. And that's really what I want to see. I think that's what everybody wants to see, is a level playing field, whether that's insurance coverage, whether it's 24/7, whether it's geographic, whether it's wheelchair access. Performance standards, that seems to be the hue and cry I'm hearing. And if we want to sort of cut through, you know, all the fog, we're going to need the truth out there. And as I raised last week, getting to the truth, I think, is you know, really the crux of the matter here. And I think, you know, one of the things I suggested last week, and I will reiterate again, is that we look at making sure we have a robust, well-funded compliance program. And I suggested last week maybe a 50-cent per trip charge to help fund compliance efforts. Maybe that's in lieu of the permitting fees, because the permitting approach seems so different for a TNC versus a taxi cab, although it's still mystifying. So I think, you know, I really want to reserve judgment other than what I just said, universal service, 24/7, and wheelchair access. I'm certainly open to looking at, you know, the insurance issues are vexing, and, you know, just in my own conversations with my own insurance companies, it's vexing. I barely can track it. So I want to understand it better, and I appreciate the information we received today. And certainly $1 million in period one seems like something we should take a close look at. And that's, so I guess, and then I also did appreciate the testimony about the cab stands. I don't really understand the cab stand issue, but it sounds like something that is something that we need to look at too. And I guess I'm going to reserve judgment other than accepting the report today on where we need to go in the policy arena.
Okay, let me, I'll run through my list, and some of these are redundant, but just in case I miss something, I'll go ahead and mention them all. First, there are a couple of informational issues that I want to make sure, in addition to the ones that have already been raised, that I want to have data on. One was raised in testimony today, and I'll go get that from the police bureau or ask them to coordinate with PBOT, and that is, do we have any indications yet with respect to drunk driving. Has it gotten better? Has it gotten worse? It's a short time period. It's summer, so it, you know, they may say, "Ah, we can't tell." But I'm going to at least go ask the question. We have had 21 or 22 traffic-related fatalities this year. Every year, some of those involve drunk driving. I don't know where we stand with respect to a typical year, and that's, of course, crashes that are non-fatal involve alcohol as well. So that's one. To the extent that we have useful information, I want to go ask and find out. Another issue that hasn't really come up lately, but it certainly came up during the early days of discussion about this issue, and that is it's never been our intention in Portland to default to what's happening in the suburbs around us on this issue or many others for that matter. I'd like to know what's happening, and that we're in a metropolitan area. You know, we're 600,000 people out of 2 million. There are 24 cities that surround us. I think I know the answer to that question, which is they're not regulating this at all. Again, that doesn't mean that we want to go there, but I think it would be useful to find out what's happening out there in the cab industry and in the TNC world with respect to the rest of the metropolitan area. To the extent that there's any information, I think that would be useful for us as a community to know. Issues where I want to have options and decisions for the council. One is the renewal fees. What should they be? How do we level the playing field, as others here have articulated? How do we provide a stronger incentive for wave trips? This idea of an accessibility fund, is that viable? How would it work? What would it cost? Let's hear back about that. Cameras, are we requiring them for cabs? Should we be requiring them for TNCs? Drug and alcohol testing. Of course, the overall issue of caps themselves, I know what the task force's recommendation is, but what's the Bureau's recommendation? And then, yes, this smaller issue about cab stands, should, if we're going to try to preserve, as I think Commissioner Fritz has wonderfully articulated, the option of using a viable, profitable cab company or the option of using a TNC here in Portland, does providing more cab stands for the cab companies help keep them in profitable business? And also, oh, by the way, provide more service to the public, which is what this is all about. We're supposed to be regulating this industry because we're supposed to be maintaining a level of safe transportation service for the general public. So those are the items on my list. I think I captured them all.
So the first issue is income to the city and financial impacts on the city services. We currently have 753 permitted taxis in the city of Portland. Each of them pay the $600 renewal fee. That's a total of just over $450,000 that comes into now PBOT. We now have conservatively about 2,000 new TNC drivers. If they were to pay the $600 a year, we would have $1.2 million. One of my reasons for supporting the legalization of Airbnb was, first of all, that we could have a system where homes could be checked to be for safety, and second of all, that we knew we were going to get the lodging taxes paid directly to the city. We all know that we have a big challenge with transportation funding. This may be an opportunity not only to get better regulation and enforcement of our private for hire system, but also to raise some revenue. And several of the Uber and Lyft drivers last week suggested that they would be willing to pay an annual fee. The concern is that since there's so many more part-time drivers, they're not going to be reaching the $50,000 a year threshold to pay business income taxes. So I want to know, how much did we get in business income taxes from the taxi companies and from the drivers last fiscal year? What could be the potential impacts of the reduction in business income taxes? What are the fiscal challenges? Presumably, we've been funding our city staff with the permit fees that have been paid. I want to see a
plan for how we're going to have adequate number of enforcement staff and how the companies are going to pay for them. Because the city needs to not just have other systems set up, we need to be able at the very least to verify that we've got compliance with insurance, vehicle maintenance, access, background checks, and such like. So that's a big concern that I have regarding just the money part of it. How much is it costing us now, which Commissioner Fish said, but how much is it going to cost us in the future, and how are we going to pay for adequate staffing? Then going through the task force's recommendations, they suggest that we all companies would get their own background checks, which, as I've already said, is totally unacceptable to me. And I don't see that, since it was many of our drivers have said it's not burdensome for them from the taxi companies to continue having us doing their background checks, I don't know why we would take that option away from them. I do think we need to look at the permit fees for the companies, which don't make any sense, in my opinion, that the initial fee in some cases is less than the renewal fee, which I don't understand why that would be. Replacing the board of review, yes, that makes sense for the overall system, but what we really need to do in the next couple of months is to have the taxi companies get together and figure out what would make your industry continue to be viable? What does the city need to do? What do you need to do to be able to provide that service that I and others value so much? Because we're not going to choose the alternative. The recommendation is that permit approval and denial would be assigned to the commissioner in charge of transportation and delegated to PBOT, not to the advisory committee and not to come to council. I think that we need to discuss, that the taxi companies need to discuss, how do you decide what the right number of taxi cabs is, given that we may have 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, however many, unlimited numbers of Uber drivers, what's the right number of taxis in order to be able to preserve a viable system? And there does seem to me to be some, I'd like you to discuss, and then and PBOT to come back with a recommendation on, should we continue to limit the number of taxi cabs based on supply and demand? The third recommendation is about record keeping. It sounds very good. However, there needs to be a mechanism to fund and verify the funding of fund the verification of all of these reporting requirements. I do agree with some of the testimony that said that the TNC driver should have large magnets on their car that is much more clearly identifying them as a TNC. A phone number to call with in large numbers, because remember, we're the folks who have the old flip phones and other landlines that we're not going to just dial up the app on our smartphone.
Commissioner Fritz?
Yes.
Would you yield on one point?
Yes.
I wasn't here for the conclusion of the last hearing. Did we get a response to the question that was asked about who the local agent is and what the phone number is for both Lyft and Uber?
Nope.
Yeah, no, we got it.
Yeah, we looked up. They both have local agents of service. Uber has a local office with a 503 telephone number and staffed. Lyft has an email and an 800 number for complaints.
Just want to acknowledge that it took the city council, you know, a couple of weeks to unearth that, and now you're putting that in the record. But how on earth is a customer supposed to figure all that out?
Yeah, so that just needs to be clearly posted.
I think I'm glad we've resolved it, but it now needs to be broadcast so that a customer can get that information.
Well, more particularly a bystander who may be aggrieved as well. Thank you, Commissioner Fish. I appreciate you clarifying that. So on page 2, the next item is about the company permits, and as I said, I think that needs to be discussed in much more detail. The next item is the citywide service, which Commissioner Fish covered eloquently. The next one is about maximum fare rates for taxi cabs, and the recommendation is to get rid of mandated fares and caps. How on earth is a consumer supposed to know which cab to get into if we don't have a regulated system? They're supposed to go down the entire line of the taxis to find out who's going to give them the best deal. That doesn't make any sense to me. So again, that's something that I think that the taxi drivers should be working on and helping to give us a recommendation. The surge pricing, I don't think, works for taxis either. street hailing is it needs some enforcement. What's the enforcement mechanism? You can actually now hail a TNC, and they will then tell you as they pull over, oh, you need to put on your app and request me, and then I'll accept you, and then I'll get into, then you can get into my car. That doesn't seem to be in the spirit of what we're doing, and so there needs to be much more education. What's the plan for education for community members that they are not supposed to be doing that, if indeed we continue with that regulation? I agree with the waiting in the taxi zone area. The TNC vehicles, in this section at the bottom of page 2, it doesn't list cameras as a requirement for taxis, but in the next section on page 3, it does list cameras as a requirement for taxis. I suggest that we need to continue having cameras in taxis because, again, that's one of the things that makes me feel safer and is safer for the drivers. So I agree with the first part on number 3. On page 3. The background checks, as I've already expressed, it's just I don't trust private corporations to be able to do the kind of verification that I do trust our city staff to do, and I appreciate the diligence that the city staff have done. The driver working hours, I'd be interested to know how that's going to be enforced and how are there TNCs currently being asked to tell us how many hours their drivers have the app on, and I'd like to know what those hours are. The transparency regarding the next one is about the driver kiddies or fees, and it's suggesting to do away with floors or ceilings on driver kiddies and fees. That doesn't seem to protect the taxi drivers very well, and so I think that again needs to be discussed by the taxi companies and their drivers with a recommendation. On page 4, it suggests that the company has a responsibility for administering a city-approved training and testing program and require defensive driving training. Again, I don't trust the companies to do that. We've heard testimony and gotten emails about drivers being allowed on one of the TNC's platform while they were waiting for their background check to come back, and that's just not acceptable. There needs to be penalties for when the wheelchair accessible vehicles are not required. I think that is one of the big positives of this experiment, this pilot, is that we have focused much more on providing the wheelchair access vehicles. And I agree that having some kind of a per fee, per ride on all riders fee to then pay triple to those providing WAV service seems like a very good way to around it. And then, again, I'm still concerned about the additional cars on the street. It was interesting that we were discussing this morning about congestion and thinking about all of these cars now doing the additional rides. So the last page on 5 is the insurance issue. I have to tell you that it is very hard for me to listen to people asserting that $50,000 for a person's life is an adequate amount of compensation, and that $100,000 per incident. The driver that killed my husband 48 weeks ago today had $300,000, which is above the state minimum by a long way. However, there were 4 people injured or killed in the crash, and so I still have not had a penny of that insurance yet. And so certainly money doesn't compensate for the love of a lost one. $50,000 wouldn't even cover the medical bills of our friend Carrie Fairchild. So these insurance limits, I think that's something I've said before that we need to put on our legislative agenda to get our state limits changed. If people are driving commercially, at the very least, they need to have the same as the taxi companies, which is $1 million per occurrence, $2 million in aggregate, $500,000 for the vehicle. And I would like to get to see if we can require that sooner rather than later. Wouldn't it be wonderful if Portland was the best and safest place in the entire country to hail an Uber, because at least you'd know you'd be covered. And then as the insurance expert told us, there will be the question of, does Uber and Lyft actually want to operate in our city if we require them to have adequate levels of insurance at all times? That's their choice. That's where the free market comes in. That's where responsible drivers come in, and that's the policy that I think we should be doing sooner rather than later. We did have some very compelling testimony from Wendy Kellington last week regarding the insurance and regarding EcoCab, having been told that their insurance was fine and then being told it was not fine. She sent us some additional testimony. Apparently, we're already implementing that all insurance policies must carry an AM Best company rating of A-8. I have no clue what that is, but the council hasn't directed that yet, so I don't think eco-cabs should be penalized for following the previous policy when we haven't changed it yet. Second of all, they raised the issue of having an insurance company that's accepted in the state of Oregon and that has backup insurance from the state of Oregon should the insurance company go bust. And I think that that's – I would want more information on that. I want us to look into that because, again, we should be supporting Oregon companies, not off-state or out-of-country offshore insurance companies that are not going to stand behind either the company or the driver should something terrible happen. And so that's another piece of making sure that the insurance is acceptable in the state of Oregon. Good. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Steve, what have you got?
So on the issue of permit fees, that's something staff is actively working on right now. We want to come up with a system that is fair and that does cover the cost of enforcement and compliance monitoring. And we are postponing the renewal fees for the taxis until we have figured out a new system. I have to say that we need to come up with enough money to fund a system that's unlike any we've had before. Because I have to tell you that 6 months ago, we did not have aggressive monitoring and compliance and enforcement of the taxi cabs for a variety of requirements. We did the background checks, we did the vehicle inspections, we did not have people out checking at all hours of the day and night to make sure there was truly citywide 24/7 taxi service, including for people who need WAVs. So that's a new thing for us, which I'm very much committed to doing. And as Commissioner Fritz said, there needs to be penalties for not meeting those standards. Last week, I saw some data that indicated that for the TNCs, they clearly were not meeting those standards. And I think that we do need to start moving towards penalties. I need more data, actually, on whether the taxis are meeting those standards, and I asked staff to start more aggressively gathering that data. So the permit fees is an issue we're actively working on. We want to come up with a fair system. Responding to what Commissioner...
What about a 50 cent
that actually
charge?
I don't dismiss that as an option, okay. Commissioner Saltzman. I'd like staff to figure out whether that might make more sense. Okay. I appreciate that suggestion. I agree with Commissioner Fish and Commissioner Fritz that if we are going to require a higher level of insurance for period one than is in the, quote, national agreement, we need to serve notice of that now. And I have to say that at present, there's not a final decision, but I am inclined to say that we need higher levels of insurance in period one. I note that last week, Mike Greenfield, the head of the task force, although he's speaking solely for himself, said he doesn't see the reason for the big difference between period one and periods two and three. So I see that at least one of the representatives of Uber is still here. We'll get in touch with Lyft and just sort of serve notice that they need to start thinking about how to go about getting a higher level of insurance in period one. So those are, oh, and one more thing. I do want Commissioner Fritz to be able to continue to call a taxi when she needs one. I'm not sure that it makes sense to have one set of background check requirements for taxis and another for TNCs. Maybe that's a road we want to go down, but I want to ask the question. I mean, I recognize the task force's recommendation is to have the background checks solely handled by private companies. I want to get a sense of how much of a sort of administrative burden it would be on the police and the LED system, et cetera, if we simply had the government do background checks for everybody. So that's an issue that I think requires further discussion.
You know, I asked Chief O'Day about that in our first consideration of this issue, and I was told by him that LEDs is kicking off cities doing background checks on taxi drivers.
Yeah,
we'll
I think,
check on that.
Actually, my understanding is that LEDs has sort of, the state police has sort of asked us to justify using LEDs to do background checks on taxi drivers, and I don't actually know if that means that they're about to kick us off or they just want us to give a reasonable explanation.
Mayor, can I, in light of something my friend Dan said, can I clarify my request on access? So Dan said we need to make our decision based on data, we need to lift the fog. He wasn't referring to fats, oil, and grease. So I agree we need to make good policy on the basis of data. The concern that I have is that it's apples to apples data. And if the TNCs are effectively excluding whole sections of our community from service, then I'm not particularly impressed with the cherry-picked numbers on service times. If we are requiring that they serve the city, which is the minimum requirements in the statute I referred to earlier, then I don't want to base a future decision on data that is based on the calls they are choosing to take, and lose track of the fact that there's a lot of people who are not getting access to the service because their app says there's no car available. And so you have to, if we're going to require universal service, I don't want cherry-picked data that has misleading service times, nor does Dan. Dan and I, there's no daylight between Dan Saltzman and me in terms of wanting to have an adequate level of service for disabled residents of our community. But if you can simply frustrate our system by not providing service, and then you report that you've got good response times in the inner core, that's not consistent with what I think this council intends to regulate. So if you are required to provide service to everybody, then I don't want to be looking at apps that indicate that by the time you get to 82nd, if that's where you're initiating your call, there's no service available. Because then you're essentially saying there's no service for disabled residents, and the other data does not impress me.
Question for staff. On the taxi company's app, Curb, does it work the same way, and you could look at the Curb app and see whether there's service available, like look over a geographic area?
And I think the other piece of that, Commissioner Fish, is the scheduled rides that taxi cabs do. Those haven't been included in the on-time data.
That's correct. It was an on-demand comparison.
Yes, but I think in order to be fair, we need to be looking at the scheduled rides as well, and assuming that they are, unless there's a complaint or some evidence that they're not being picked up on time, that's a service too. And that's how people like me use cabs. We schedule them ahead of time.
Yep. Here?
Yes.
I move the report.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion on accepting the report. Roll call, please.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
I want to, again, give my profuse thanks to the members of the task force who have put in, as Mr. Owens pointed out, more than 700 hours of their time analyzing these issues, hearing testimony from a wide variety of people, and responding to questions posed by citizens and by this council. We're not going to implement every one of the recommendations of this task force. There's some even that I take issue with, but the work of the task force has been extraordinary, and the staff support has been extraordinary, and I'm honored to have had the opportunity to assemble this task force. And I'm still amazed that most of the people we initially asked to serve in the task force agreed to do so. We have a group of fantastic people doing a lot of very hard work, and I can't thank them enough. Aye.
Gritz.
Thank you to the task force, Jim Owens, for facilitating, and for Leah and all your staff. This is a very challenging issue. We're looking at doing things very differently from how we've done it before. Also want to thank Claire Adamsick on my staff, who has been on my staff for the last 6 months, and I think has spent the majority of her time on this issue. So she's done amazing work. We are getting closer to addressing the real needs of all in our community, and I think it's clear that there needs to be room for the different kinds of options. We need to make sure that those different kinds of options are viable for the kinds of people who are using them. Capitalism is not a system that works particularly well for providing services, especially public services. Competition doesn't always ensure adequate coverage, wages, or benefits when profit is the sole motive. And the question we're asking is, to what extent should government be involved in providing for this type of service? I do see this as part of the public transportation system, and I trust government, which I know a lot of people don't, but I've been involved for the last 6.5 years, and I trust government workers, and I know that our staff, first in revenue, now in transportation, do great work in doing those background checks, in making sure that the inspections are done, in doing the spot checks, and I don't trust out-of-state corporations.
one of the roles of government is to provide for public safety and for orderly provision of service, and we need to continue to be able to do that. We also need to be able to support our businesses. I think one of the testifiers said preserving full-time jobs is not one of our roles on the City Council. I disagree. It absolutely is. Providing gainful employment for Portlanders is definitely one of my big concerns. We need to make sure we have the regulatory safeguards in place, that we're meeting the core standards, and I don't know that we have that yet. I do expect that when we see the trip pattern data in October, we'll get a clearer picture of the late night service and the service to the communities in Outer East. And I will be interested to get a clearer picture from staff as to how we're doing to ensure compliance. I'd like to see the reports from the inspection staff specifically with examples of what they've seen out there in the community. And I want to see how are we going to fund to make sure that at the very least we still have adequate enforcement within the city. As I've mentioned, the insurance coverage is huge, and Commissioner Novick, I appreciate your willingness to look at asking the companies to implement the commercial levels as soon as possible, because I think that it's crucial, and it's only a matter of time before something tragic happens, and I want to make sure that in that awful instance, at least, the family doesn't have to worry about whether they're going to lose their house as a result of a commercial driver having a crash. Thank you, Mayor, for your leadership on this, and thanks to everybody who's participated in this process. It's been a meaningful community engagement process, and your input has made a difference on all sides, and so you should feel good about that. Aye.
Fish.
Well, this vote is to accept a report, and I have expressed my deep misgivings about the process and my deep skepticism that we can get to a level playing field, but that's not what we're voting on right now. Our vote is to accept a report and to thank the task force for the time and effort they put into giving us the recommendations. And it is one of our great traditions of this body that when we ask a group of citizens to do a lot of hard work and produce a report, we set aside our differences at moments like this and we simply say thank you. And if we didn't, we'd have a hell of a time getting people to serve on these task force in the future. So whether we agree or disagree with any of the recommendations in this report, that's not what we're doing right now. Right now, we are celebrating the fact that citizens in our community devote lots of time to help us make complicated decisions. And this is an excellent report and has helped shape what I think is one of the more interesting discussions we've had in the council in a long time. Also, thank you to Bureau staff for all of your work. I'm not sure where this is going to end for me, but I do agree with Commissioner Fritz that all sides of this debate have stepped up and have raised the quality of the debate so that whatever decision we make, whether you agree with it or not, it will certainly be informed by this, by all the time and energy we're putting into it. So I'm enormously grateful for that. And I echo Commissioner Fritz's comment, Steve, that I appreciate that a consensus is now forming around insurance, and I do agree with you that we need to send that signal early on. I don't want to come back in December and find out that it's a six-month lag to actually implementing it. So thanks to my colleagues. Thanks to everyone who has been participating. Aye.
Ailes.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Novick, PBOT, and again, our task force, well said, Commissioner Fish, for weighing in and giving us some guidance so far. More work, obviously, ahead to do, quite a bit of it, based on what the council has laid out here already in this discussion. And again, I want to make sure that everyone understands that we can lob a few more questions and requests in if they are either suggested to us or occur to us over the next couple of days so that you have your full scope of work in front of you. You know, from the beginning of our work on these issues of the new economy, as some call it, we've tried to find a good place for Portland to land. And we were confronted by the eruption of people renting out their spare bedroom through websites in ways that didn't conform to our old regulations about hotels, motels, and room taxes. And we've tried to figure out a way for that piece of the new economy to operate legally in our city. Both words are important. want to try to make it operate because there is change all around us in this tech-friendly city in a tech suffused world. So there's change all around us. Many have suggested that we should deal with that, and we're trying. But we also have some old public responsibilities about safety that never go away and about trying to support local businesses that should never go away. And that's the middle ground that we're trying to find. And I hope everyone understands that we're trying to find that. In the now infamous meeting that Commissioner Novick and I attended, my first face-to-face meeting with anyone from Uber was where I told them we will be